Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Elegy for the Undead, a novella, by Matthew Vesely. Narrated by Daniel Henning and Charlie Thurston. Jude, 1 month after. She delivered a long diagnosis, probably much longer than it had to be, telling us how short the time was. The way the virus usually works, it makes its way through the bloodstream up to the brain. Simultaneously, it works to flare up the amygdala and numb signals from the frontal cortex. In non-scientific terms, that makes you unreasonably angry without anything telling you to stop. That isn't the worst of it, though, only the first symptom. The anger happens about 2 to 3 hours after infection. Then the virus starts breaking down your internal organs, usually the liver and lungs, first. Sometimes it causes the gallbladder to burst. The infected body then falls into a coma, but technically doesn't die yet. The point we've been claiming as death is when the lungs start to expel blood while the infected body is still comatose. Soon afterward, the body wakes up and attacks anything it sees, instinctually biting to spread the virus. That usually takes about 6 hours from the time of infection. Dr. Cerrone sat across the room from Lyle and me. Lyle was squeezing my fingers. The office blinds were glowing. Strips of light fell on the solemn bookshelves, on Dr. Cerrone's folded hands, and on Lyle's lap. I squeezed his hand back. "But you," the doctor said, "your symptoms are going to be much different, slower, and hopefully not painful. Since the early recipients of the drug started showing these delayed symptoms, we now know it's not a cure, but it does change the course of the disease. Lyle, when did you first get bitten?" Lyle squeezed my hand tight one last time, then let go. "The 12th of last month." "May 12th, she scribbled it in her notes. "And you were treated an hour afterward?" Lyle nodded matter-of-factly with his eyes downcast, the way a child can't look at a scolding parent. "Good," the doctor said. "That's better than most we were able to get to during your outbreak." Something about that made me want to laugh in a cynical kind of way. Your outbreak. Like it was ours. We owned the deadliest Anna outbreak in world history. And yet we had survived. Both Lyle and I were alive. We had cuts and bruises and scars, both physical and deeper, but we had survived. The morning before we were called into Dr. Cerrone's office, I woke up beside him and he was already awake, staring at the ceiling, not blinking. For a moment I feared he was dead. Maybe it was a dream? No. I could feel the comforter's weight pressing back against my stomach as I inhaled, and the knots in my throat catching my breath as I exhaled. "Lyle?" I asked. He turned his head to me, closed his eyes for a moment, then fluttered them open again, as if he were just waking up. He stretched under the covers and smiled.
"Good morning, babe."
The doctor's office called early in the afternoon and said we had to come in. Lyle had been going for tests every other day since we got home. Home had been quiet, the neighborhood mute, most everyone dead or gone, or rather, everyone except the Joneses at the end of the street, who'd been away on vacation when the outbreak happened. Lucky them. When we arrived, Dr. Cerrone gave us the news, the fate I'd thought we avoided. Lyle seemed unmoved. Not like he was in shock, but like he had accepted it in his quiet place, some time ago. Dr. Cerrone gave us her best guess about the timeline based on the other patients they'd been studying. I was not pleased. And then we went home, to live out what remained of the time we had together.
Part 1. The Drain. Lyle. 7 years prior. I want to remember back before the outbreak, before the virus, before I had even known the life I would come to know, before Jude, I want to relive it like it's happening all over again. Perhaps living again in this way is the beautiful death we all deserve. When the sun turns reddish-orange instead of yellow, and the clouds tint the same, and shadows are flung off the high school away from the light, and you're all alone on top of the huge drain that keeps the pond from overflowing with muck, that's the perfect time to light a cigarette. Perfect weather, too. The warmth of spring after a long chill. It had been a rough year for me. I wasn't failing, but my grades were good enough to get me rejected from a third college. I'd applied to 5. The end of my cigarette matched the color of the sky, burning on every inhale. I sat on the drain. Cigarette butts dotted the cement behind me. There was a strip of trees and brush behind that, and a new metal fence guarding the whole space except for where the drain reached out into the water. Burnt orange sunlight cast chain-link shadows on my face as I took another drag. The cement behind me held the large protruding pipe in place, and usually that's where people would sit, on that cement. But I liked the pipe. It was metallic and cold, and I liked dangling my feet off the end where it dipped into the pond. The pond was really a drainage ditch, but even so I wasn't scared of falling into the water. I did enjoy the water's color when the shadows were out, and the clouds were tinted, and the sun was reddish-orange instead of yellow. "How did you get in there?" Out of instinct, I snuffed out my cigarette on the pipe, a reflex when people caught me smoking. "Sorry, what?" I asked, but then I turned and it was only Jude. He stood below, beside the drain at the edge of the water. "How did you..." "I just hopped over the fence." Never mind. The drain was a frequent hangout spot for my classmates, but not usually at that hour. People went before school for the same reason I usually did, to smoke. People went during school, I was usually there, to skip class. People went after school, I was usually there, to not go home. It was close enough to the high school to walk, but just far enough out of range to not be noticed. I hadn't seen Jude at the drain in a while, not since earlier in the year when he and Julie had started dating. Why is it that when people started dating in high school, it's so awkward? I would see Jude and Julie, God, they sound like siblings, holding hands in the hallway. But Julie would keep a yard of space in between her and Jude, and never look at Jude, but just look at the floor and keep walking. She was strange. Jude's hands can get clammy, so it probably had something to do with that. I lit another cigarette to replace the first. "You haven't been here in a while," I said. "I don't like the new fence." "Does a great job at keeping out the school kids." I chuckled at my own sarcasm, leaning back over the water, bathing in the patchy light, tapping out a bit of ash that disappeared below. "Is there another way in?" he asked. "You can't climb?"
"Does it look like I can climb?"
He gestured to his body, which was nice enough. He might have been underestimating himself, or maybe he was just lazy. Probably lazy. I took another drag.
"Can you help me onto the drain?" he asked.
I glared. "It's really not that hard to climb the damn fence, Jew. Just do it."
"It's really not that hard to help me up there so I don't fall or rip my pants."
I turned away from him, letting patches of sun kiss my cheeks through the chain link.
"Please?"
"Fine." Because for all the talk I gave other people about wanting to be alone, trademark, sometimes a little company was nice. Because as annoying and dumb as a bag of rocks the other people who came to the drain were, at least they weren't assholes. The drain was a simple place. At the drain you smoked, you talked, you chilled. At high school, you lied. In the town, you lied. At home, you lied. The drain was more honest. I didn't care much for Jude at the time, but I stood up and flicked my cigarette into the pond and knelt down where the drain extended from its cement base, reaching out my arm to him. He took my hand. His hands weren't that clammy. He was heftier than me, though that's always been the case and will always be the case. Because even in full health, my body is lanky. I pulled,
leaning harder on my knees for leverage. Jude climbed as best he could, clawing with his palm, pushing with his feet, crushing my hand with his grasp. I pulled him up to the drain beside me.
"Thanks," Jude said, out of breath.
"You have big hands."
"Sorry, they're also kind of sweaty now."
He wiped them on his baggy jeans. His brunette hair was highlighted under the dusky sun. I went back to my usual spot, where I sat with my legs dangling off the edge. Jude joined me. I took out another cigarette.
"Can I have one of those?"
"You've made me lose two already." He paused, held his breath, then exhaled, like he was smoking a phantom cigarette. Except that wasn't what he was trying to do.
"Sure, you can have one."
I gave him one from my pack. Being 18 was great, because I could buy my own cigarettes. I didn't have to bum them off the older kids anymore. I was the older kid, and now Jude was bumming them off me. But Jude was a senior too, so I guess he could have bought his own if he wanted to, probably. I lit mine, then his. The click of the lighter and the sudden flame, and it's vanishing. A miniature sunset. "I haven't seen you here since you started dating Julie," I said.
"Yeah."
He inhaled, coughed, then wiped tears from his eyes.
"She didn't let me smoke. Said it would kill me."
"It will," I told him.
Jude shrugged. "She won't care anymore. We broke up."
"That sucks." The conversation paused. Jude was quiet. "Does this mean you won't be taking up half the hallway when you hold hands?" I asked. Jude squeaked, a laugh. Cicadas were singing. We could hear them from the trees behind us. The breeze was soft, the calmest it had been the entire spring. The shadows were starting to grow too large and fade into each other. The sun had set, but only behind the trees. The cool of night was coming. We each took another drag at the same time. I thought it was strange. "Do you know Danny Bridges?" I asked.
"Not really," Jude said.
"He's in your math class." I tapped more ash into the water. "He's gay."
"Really?"
His voice went a bit higher, almost like the squeak of his laugh.
"That's cool."
"We were together," I told him.
"Really?"
"Yeah. But he didn't want to be actually together. And then he threatened to punch me because I told Grace I blew him. So now I'm telling everyone, hoping they'll show up to the drama show he's in next week with We Hate Fag signs. You should do it too. But make sure the hate is spelled without an E so you look as dumb as the rest." Jude turned towards me.
"That's really fucked up."
I turned towards him. He stared at me. No emotion, or maybe a little anger. Definitely a little anger. When Jude gets angry, his mouth looks like a jack-o'-lantern's mouth, and his eyes try to swallow you. A riptide of blue. I don't think it's very intimidating, but it is cute. I like making people mad. I turn back towards the pond. "Yeah, you're right. Maybe I'll stop." The truth? I'd never started. Except with Jude. He turned back towards the pond.
"Good."
I flicked the mostly finished cigarette into the pond, picked out another, and started my fourth.
"Fuck him, though," Jude said.
I chuckled.
"Already did. Pretty terrible."
Our legs dangling off the drain, the breeze caressing the surface of the pond, the shadows fading into an even state. The cicadas calling across town. The last of the sun's beams dwindling. Jude and I smoked quiet cigarettes, many more than either of us would consider healthy, and occasionally talked, but mostly just sat there with each other because it was comfortable. The orange in the sky faded, and then Jude got down from the drain the same way he came up, and then I climbed the fence, and then we parted ways. We wouldn't meet again until it was right for both of us. Lyle, 7 years prior. I was accepted by a school close to home, a Christian university about 20 minutes from my parents' house.
You may be wondering why I attended a religious school. My mother raised me and my siblings Christian, but I never took to the faith. Services were boring, youth group was annoying, and the church was homophobic. I was about as close to God as God was to me. To clarify, I fear what may happen after I die. So I went there out of obligation. You have to attend some kind of college, and I had to attend a Christian university because it was the only one that accepted me. College life was, for me, a blank space. A mechanical life. Mechanical meaning every day I would wake up and go to school, or to my part-time job at a dental office where I filed papers and took calls. The job was very fun, I assure you. But the days at school were worse. I wasn't doing well in most classes, because I knew I couldn't cut it in academia, because I could barely cut it in high school, because part of me didn't want to cut it, because I had no reason to cut it. Those days consisted of: wake up, drive to campus from my parents' house, where I still lived, disappoint my professors, drive back home. The drive would frequently become a vortex, like I wasn't conscious doing it. Sometimes I would turn on the car and drive the whole way in complete silence without even realizing it. And when I got to campus, I'd turn the car off and not remember what day it was, or the difference from yesterday or the day before that. It was like not remembering falling asleep, and then waking up in a strangely familiar place. At the end of the first semester, I slid my last paper, written sloppily the night before, through the crack under my professor's door. It felt as if I were floating above my body, watching myself slide that paper out of sight. I didn't recognize myself. The previous 4 months had been hard, and I couldn't imagine doing 7 more semesters of anything like it. It wasn't who I was. To tell the truth, majoring in writing seemed especially futile. I mean, can you teach an art form? Sometimes I would just walk around campus for lack of anything better to do and find obscure paths in the woods, which had once been official paths but had long since succumbed to time and nature and the faults of memory. On a favorite path of mine, I would stop at a small bridge and watch the turtles raise their heads from the water, waiting for scraps of food. Sometimes I'd give them a bit of granola bar. Moments of peace did happen. Campus was scenic and solitary, glowing and mute. The wind was calm and soft, like the Holy Spirit. You could barely tell if it were real. I was walking beside the baseball field along a long and winding path that passed by the dorms and led to the parking lot, when, for the first time since dusk at the drain, since high school, I caught a glimpse of Jude. He had cut his hair, grown a bit of a beard, and started wearing glasses. But he still looked like June. When we got closer to each other along that long, winding path beside the baseball field, he recognized me. Lyle? I looked behind me, as if that wasn't my name, or I didn't know for certain he was talking to me. Jude, right? I knew for certain it was Jude. Yeah. His shoulders fell a bit with disappointment. Do you remember me? I helped you up on the drain once. You did, he nodded. It was late in the day, campus business quiet and concluding. He stood in front of me like a wall, but I didn't try to go around him. The wall was familiar. Nostalgia seeped through it like water, collecting in a calm glass on my bedside table to be there when I'd wake up. In the space of about 10 seconds, standing in front of Jude felt comfortable. And then he spoke. So, I broke up with someone recently. It's kind of the first time this semester I've been out of my dorm for anything that isn't class or work. I just wanted to smoke a cigarette. Do you still smoke? I laughed. One big laugh that broke the quiet of the campus. Jude was taken aback, and I wasn't sure in which way. Oh, wow, I'm sorry. Yes, I do still smoke. Sorry. Jude laughed, timidly. Want to come with me? It wasn't the drain, but one of those deserted paths through the woods did the trick. We found an out-of-the-way spot with a rusted bench. Dusk was setting in, and the woods were getting louder. It all had a delicate horror movie vibe to it, and we each lit a cigarette. "What was her name?" I asked. "His." I took my cig from my mouth, turned my head. He looked sad. "That's fucking awesome," I said. Jude chuckled.
"Thanks."
"I'm gay too."
I knew that already.
And that was how Jude and I came out to each other. Another cigarette in, he told me about his work. Jude worked as a math tutor part-time.
"It isn't very far," Jude said. "I can walk pretty easily. It's only a couple of miles down Lancaster,"
which was a mile away itself. "That's far."
"I used to walk to school a lot," he said, "and the high school was 4 miles from my house."
I pity you. I did pity him, but my empathy was lacking. Feelings in general were a difficult concept at the time. I could only offer a solution. "I can just drive you, at least for today."
"You don't have to.
It's just one time." But it didn't end up being one time, because 2 days afterward we saw each other again and got lunch, and then we hung out until he had work, and then I drove him so we could continue talking about how Kingdom Hearts was the most convoluted but best video game series of all time. It was only after the second encounter that I realized how much I had wanted to see June. I'd put all my will into the chance occurrence of me seeing June. Or perhaps it wasn't specifically that I wanted to see Jude, but that I wanted, had quietly begged the world to send something to change me. Instead, Jude revealed me. I didn't dislike his smile, and I certainly had an affinity for his eyes. I know that's so cliche, his eyes. Talking about description in Creative Writing 1, the one class I excelled in, the professor said not to use eyes as a crutch. Talk about the way he walks with a subtle bounce that you would expect from an acrobat or a dancer. Talk about the way he never brushes his hair because it's curly, and you don't understand how he gets away with it. Talk about the way he talks. The way you speak and he listens. The way he speaks and you want to listen. Because what he says makes you smile. The way he holds nothing against his family even though they're shitty. The way he likes it when you hold him. The way he imagines your future together. I'm getting ahead of myself, of course. We didn't talk about all that just yet. We reached an understanding, although we never fully verbalized it. We would hang out after class. Then I would offer to drop him off at work on my way home. He would ask every time if I was sure it was okay, until finally we fell into the rhythm of it. He was almost like a best friend, in the way your only friend is your best friend. One day in the car, I asked him about his parents, what they were like when he was growing up, how they took the news he was gay.
"My parents raised me on Cher, RuPaul, and Diana Ross," he said. "What else could they expect but 2/3 of their children being gay?"
"Maybe it was failed reverse psychology?" I suggested.
"Failed for sure."
I turned on Cher. The mention of her name made me crave her music. Jude nodded along. "So they were okay with it?" I asked.
"It took them a little while. My mom told me she never wanted to see me kiss another boy. But she's always been overdramatic. She's okay with it now. She met my ex-boyfriend, and it was okay."
There was a pause. "What was that relationship like?" I asked. I asked because I was curious about his ex, and I was curious about the whole idea of being in a relationship, being involved in someone else's life, and being okay with them in mine. It wasn't something I knew much about. He nodded.
"His name was Martin. It was the weirdest relationship. He had a lot of problems communicating his feelings. There were just week-long periods of time when he wouldn't talk to me."
"That's shitty."
"You're telling me."
It wasn't just driving. It was driving the scenic route when we had the time, stopping for iced coffee even on the cold days, and sharing stories about classes,
I was never very good at talking, considering I never cared about most of my day. But I liked listening to Jude's stories, even the simple ones like seeing a blue jay or running into a friend. A day without an excuse to see him was a day emptied. So I started just asking him to hang out, even when I didn't have class and he didn't have work. He never refused. I wonder now if the sudden development of our friendship is a product of my memory, or if my vivid memory of the time is a product of our friendship. Friendship, that's all it was at the time. We would have lunch and talk and drive, all as friends. I was determined that nothing more would come of it. Cupid, you won't hit me. Lunch does not a love make, and I didn't love him then. Or rather, I didn't know I was interested. Not until the day we had lunch in the chapel, because I wanted to play the piano, and that was the only in-tune piano on campus. I played the simple tunes I knew, some Sarah Bareilles, some of my own work. Then Jude took the bench and played some songs he knew from Zelda. The sound was spotty, but delightful. And the feeling of leaning against the pew, deformed pastel light filtering through the stained glass onto his hands at the keys, was horrifying. And by horrifying, I mean beautiful, and stirring, and hindering my ability to distance myself from wanting him. The tiny campus must have seen the change. How we were always together, the way we looked at each other, the way we would eat a late lunch, always with each other but less and less frequently with other people we knew. Should I fall in love? That's a silly question, of course you should. Should I fall in love again? Now that's more complicated. The first time I fell in love, he didn't love me back. I was in high school, when love was just an idea in my head, and hate meant bullies. I was bullied all through elementary and middle school for being too feminine. In middle school, another boy asked me, my whole class around us, his small ass on my desk, crinkling my papers, "Have you ever kissed a girl?" It was the sixth grade. "No, I've never kissed a girl." I couldn't look at him, so I looked at the papers he sat on. My timid demeanor was amplifying my weakness, calling the bullies to prey on me. I couldn't do the difficult things like look my bullies in the eye, or punch them in the jaw, or kiss them when no one was looking.
"You've kissed a boy, though," he said.
The class laughed. I don't remember their names now. The tall kid with the downy middle school mustache. The one with the Nikes and the frosted hair. The one with the messy braid. Another wearing the first sports bra of the class. Simpler times, when I was learning how to deal with embarrassment.
"No, I've never kissed a boy either," I corrected Daniel. "But you are gay," he corrected me.
The class chuckled. I kid you the fuck not, the class chuckled. So I went home that day after class. I pulled out those notes Danny had crumpled with his ass. I cried into those notes so my mother would think I was just tired of studying. And I spent the next few years learning to get the fuck over it. "Yes, Daniel, I am gay, but so are you, so shut the fuck up and suck my dick." Now that you see my idea of love, you'll understand why I held back with Jude. It's like instead of jumping into the swimming pool, we dipped our toes, then our legs, then our chests to make sure we wouldn't drown before we learned how to breathe underwater. To think the deepest love needs to fly high and free like Icarus is juvenile. I'd already flown too close to the sun, gone for the sky and burnt up. The burn scars last forever. The days with Jude got longer, and with spring I found myself over at his dorm more often. We talked less like friends, less about our classes and favorite games and high school memories. We talked more like flirts. More about each other, and the way his eyes were so blue, and it was so corny that I said that.
"I like to sleep," Jude said.
"I like to sleep a lot," I said.
"I like to sleep at least 24 hours a day."
"I'd prefer to die if I weren't so reliant on living." Jude nodded.
I agree.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?